I'm singing some of the old songs been handed down for years and years in the mountains here.
Welcome to Down Home Radio. On today's show, we have an interview with Eastern Kentucky banjo player George Gibson. Very happy to have George on the program. I caught up with him at the Black Banjo Gathering at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. I was down there as part of this sort of conference festival celebrating the African-American origins of old-time music, and there were a number of numbers of really great people that were participating in this event, and there'll be certainly more coverage of it here on Down Home Radio. The first thing that I'm going to bring out from the Black Banjo Gathering is this interview that I conducted with George. Really a remarkable guy. He learned banjo from his neighbors in Knott County in eastern Kentucky back in, I guess, around 1950, in the early 50s, at a time when the culture of old-time music was sort of dying out in that region. But he was able to learn it from people in his community. And in addition to being a fine singer and banjo player, he's also a historian and scholar of the music of his region, as well as a teacher. He's been a sort of a teacher and a mentor to a number of the young Southern old-time musicians today. Playing behind my voice have been some field recordings of one of George Gibson's neighbors from when he was a kid, a banjo player named Bill Cornett, known as Banjo Bill Cornett. First we heard Banjo Bill's version of Cripple Creek, and now we are hearing his version of a square dance tune called Buck Creek Girls. We'll hear more from George during the interview about meeting Banjo Bill Cornett and seeing him play down in eastern Kentucky more than 50 years ago. As usual, don't forget to check out the website, downhomeradioshow.com, for lots more information on this program, as well as all of our other programs. And we would like to thank our friends over at the Old Time Herald magazine for running our ad. You can check out the Down Home Radio advertisement in the magazine there, as well as all of their awesome coverage of old-time music that they have in the magazine. Check out their website, oldtimeherald.org, and you can subscribe there. I'd also like to mention the upcoming Brooklyn Folk Festival. Check that out, brooklynfolkfest.com, May 21st through 23rd, out here in Brooklyn, down at Jalopy Theater, and in a nearby park. It's gonna be real fun. Been organizing that for a while now, and it's gonna be 3 days of great music. So check it out, brooklynfolkfest.com. Now let's get down to the interview with George Gibson.
Circle left.
Little bit of Wild Bill Jones.
That's real nice. Where and when did you first start playing the banjo?
I started playing banjo in Knott County, Kentucky around 1950. I had traded for a banjo, and I heard a rumor that my father had played, and he had probably 10 or 15 years previously, but like all the older banjo players in the area, he had ceased playing banjo after World War II.
What do you think made him stop?
For one thing, the culture in that area collapsed. It started collapsing before World War II, during the 30s, but during the 40s and 50s, people left to get jobs in Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, everywhere. And a lot of the musicians left. All the cultural things that supported banjo, like dances in homes and schools, they stopped right around World War II. So my father had a country grocery store, and some of the old-timers who had played knew I had a banjo would stop by occasionally and play for me. And my dad played my banjo also, so I learned songs and tunings from him. As well as I had one neighbor that wasn't playing bluegrass. Everybody that wanted to play banjo in that era played bluegrass. But this fellow was 7 or 8 years older than I. He had learned from some really remarkable singers and banjo players on the creek. That was Burgess Creek in Knott County. And he was an excellent old-time banjo player and singer. So I learned things from him, several old-timers. I learned some songs and tunes from a moonshiner. So I just learned from wherever I could, and I was always interested in the history, and I asked them about the dances and what happened, you know, at the dances, and made myself fairly knowledgeable on a culture that had practically vanished, you know. It was common at that time for 90% or more of a graduating class in high school to be gone within a year to another state.
So literally, it wasn't just a cultural collapse, but it was an economic collapse. People were leaving for industrial jobs.
Yes. Yes, it was. Jobs were few and far between, and in the 50s, the few jobs were in the coal mines. And other than that, there wasn't much there. To give you an idea of how times changed, in Letcher County, Kentucky, which is next to Knott County and very close to my cabin on my family farm, there were 7 new car dealerships in that county at one time. Now there's none. I would think that the culture is recovering now and started recovering in the 80s and 90s somewhat. But if there is a traditional music in Knott County today, it's bluegrass.
What attracted you about old-time music, and why didn't you play bluegrass?
You know, I didn't. The friends I knew that were into music were playing bluegrass, but none of them lived close to me. You know, if I had a neighbor that played bluegrass, I would probably have been playing bluegrass. But the neighbor I had, the older fellow I told you about that was playing old-time music, his name was James Sloan. He was playing old-time music, and he was the closest neighbor I had, and I liked it, you know.
Did you think of it in those terms at that time as, like, old-time music, as, like, a specific thing?
No, actually not. That's something I picked up later. But it was traditional music of that era, at what it was, you know.
Would you play us another tune that you learned, you know, back then, or whatever comes to mind?
I'll play you the first tune I ever learned. It's a Knott County tune. It has some things in it that's typical of Knott County. And it's a Knott County song called Morphine. I took morphine last Saturday night. Lord, I took it in that morphine way. If the doctor hadn't come just as he did, Lord, I'd been in my grave today. Well, it's peaches on me, rock and roll. Oh, baby, let me tell you a dream. I dreamed last night, had a pocket full of money and a quarter in a big dice game. But when I woke, it was only a joke, and I didn't have one penny to my name. Ain't that a scandal and a shame? I took morphine last Saturday night. Lord, I took it in a hell of a way. If the doctor hadn't come just as he did, Lord, I'd be in my grave today. Well, it's peaches, honey, prayer, rock and roll. Oh, baby, I will love you till the day I die.
That's great. That's a really great version. I like that a lot. Where did you?
County song. You never hear it anywhere else unless someone like this fine gentleman sitting over here plays it for you.
I first heard that from Cliff. Yeah. How did you learn it?
James Sloan played it and sang it. He had learned it from a couple of older banjo players on the creek, and I heard one of them play and sing it. It was sung around Knott County at that time, but nowhere else as far as I know.
How big is Knott County? Is that how many people live there? What's the geographical area?
It's not that large, actually. I'd say 50 or 20,000 people, maybe. Maybe a few more than that. It's near the headwaters of two different river systems. But the interesting thing about Knott County is at least 80% of the water wells have been destroyed either by gas well drilling or mining activities.
Is that an area that's known for coal mining, or is there a lot of active mines in that area?
There's a lot of active, mostly strip mines. There's a few deep mines, you know, but a lot of strip mines, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do people feel about, because I know there's like pretty mixed feelings there. People oppose it, but other people feel that there's no way out of mining. I mean,
well, it's the only, it supports the what little economy there is. So you have the few people who work in it that support some of the stores and whatnot. That's all there is.
How did you, did you meet other musicians? Did you meet fiddlers or you know, anybody else that you played with growing up, or was it basically your personal music?
Just personal music. I played some with James Sloan and a neighbor up the creek, but didn't know any fiddlers around. And as far back as I can go to like 1900, banjo players in Knott County and probably in southeastern Kentucky outnumbered fiddle players about 10 to 1 or more.
Why is that?
The banjo was incredibly popular by at least 1900. By 1900, in a musical family, if the kids were learning to play music, they all learned, girls as well as boys, and they played banjo because it was easy to make a banjo. And it's difficult to make a fiddle. Now, there were fiddlers around, but not that many. My father played with a fiddler in 1916 over a telephone system they had at that time.
He played with him over the phone?
Over the telephone, yeah.
That's crazy.
You see, we really didn't get telephones until the late 50s. Okay. But there was remnants of the old system that was maintained by each property owner. And they had that in 1916. Now, I didn't think my dad was right about that, but I had that confirmed. I bought a book of poems called Singing Carr, because that area is known as Carr Creek also. And it was written by a would-be poet, William Aspinwall Bradley, who visited the Hyman Settlement School two or three times. And he described in that book of poems walking across the mountain to Carr. And they call it Singing Car because so many people sang. And the first cabin he came to, people were listening to hymns over the telephone, and that was in 1916.
That's wild. Did you, you know, learn from records at all, or, you know?
Actually not. I did learn one song from the radio. There was a fellow who called himself the Singing Miner. He had been a miner for years.
George Davis. Yeah.
Right. And he sang a song about the devil coming to take the farmer's wife away. And I learned that from him over the radio. But that's almost all the songs that I sing I learned there.
From your various neighbors?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most difficult thing I had was finding verses to a lot of these songs, because the old-timers who had played would sing a verse or two, but they couldn't remember all the songs, so I had to scramble around to, you know, to get all the verses. A few of the songs got pretty complete, but some of them I had to search around for additional verses.
Would you play another one?
I went out last Friday evening, just walking all around, when I met up with that Wild Bill Jones. He was walking, he was talking with my little Donny gal, and I bet I'm for to leave her alone. Some say love is pleasure, Lord, no pressure do I see, for the gal that I love as dear as my life has now turned her back on me. Well, I got mixed up in an awful fight, and I fell into the county jail. And the saddest words that ever I heard was when she wouldn't come and go my bail. I wrote my love a letter, Lord, asking her to pay my fine. She wrote me back in a week or two, saying, darling, do come home sometime. Well, it's $1 in my pocketbook and a 44 in my hand. I'm gonna go get the gal that I love, or I'm gonna go get her man. They say my age is 22, too old to be controlled. I drew my revolver all from my side, and destroying that poor boy's soul. Now he rambled, Lord, he scrambled all over the ground, and he gave one dying groan. He threw his arms up around her neck, saying, darling, you are left alone. Some say love is pleasure, Lord, no pleasure do I see, For today was the last of that Wild Bill Jones, and tomorrow'll be the last of me. That particular version came from a lady named Addie Graham. Her grandfather, Rich Kirby, is here. And I had another version, but I like this version much better. She was acquainted with a black banjo player in Wolf County named Grant Reed, and I suspect she might have heard him play and sing that.
Yeah, I went down and visited the Apple Shop in Whitesburg last summer and met Rich Kirby, and he told me about her and gave me the CD. And she's a wonderful, wonderful musician, singer, great. That was a really, really pretty version. Thank you. I know that you've done considerable work on the history of the banjo and as a banjo collector, and I was wondering if you could tell us something about, I guess, how the banjo came into Knott County or came into Kentucky.
The banjo came into Kentucky with the first settlers. There is no knowledge of a time in either oral or written history in Kentucky of when the banjo was exclusively a black instrument. It was played before the Civil War for dances with the fiddle in western Kentucky, central Kentucky, and eastern Kentucky. What happened around 1900 was the square dance started disappearing in areas like western Kentucky that were exposed to new dances and commercialization. And that made the banjo less visible without the dances. But the dances persisted in Appalachian Kentucky until around 1950. So that's one of the things that caused people to associate the banjo with mountains. It wasn't a mountain instrument, it was a rural instrument. It just lasted longer in the mountains than elsewhere. The first reference I have to the banjo in Kentucky is 1781, slave playing a banjo. The first reference I have to a white man with a banjo in Kentucky is in the 1790s. A gentleman named Mr. Rector was a deer hunter. That was his favorite pursuit. And his neighbor wrote about it and wrote about the things he did with the deer. And one of the things he did with the deer was make fiddle strings for a banjo.
He made the guts into strings?
Yes, certainly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the person who described this was one of the first doctors in Kentucky, Dr. Daniel Drake. He wrote a series of letters to his children describing his boyhood in near Maysville, Kentucky. His family had come there from New Jersey with a few other families, but most of his neighbors were from Virginia and Maryland and had slaves. And it was a very class-conscious time, and he felt that the people from New Jersey were superior to the people from Maryland and Virginia. And he went on at length about his neighbor, Mr. Rector, who made fiddle strings for the banjo, to explain just how low class this whole family was. Mr. Rector was a typical backwoodsman. He had started out around 1750 near Winchester, Virginia, on that frontier, and then moved through the Pennsylvania frontier to Maysville. By that time, he was a fairly old man, but he was just a subsistence farmer and a hunter, you know. And that's the type of people that played the banjo. You know, their tales didn't get recorded in history.
Is it the kind of people that didn't go to town too much?
Yeah, they were the kind of people that stayed on the backwoods and on the frontier, yeah. The banjo came in at the same time the fiddle did. It was been in Kentucky for a long, long time. Now, there has been a study of the runaway slave advertisements, and it's been determined there were a lot of fiddle and banjo players in Virginia and Maryland. And Kentucky was a western frontier for Virginia until 1792 when it became a state. By 1790, Kentucky had nearly 12,000 slaves, most of them from Maryland, Virginia.
So in the runaway slave advertisements, they would say, so-and-so escaped, they are known to play banjo?
Yeah, as a description. And fiddlers were probably more common, I think were more common than banjo players at that time. the first reference I have to a fiddler in Kentucky is a slave fiddler named Cato Watts that played for a dance at the Falls, now called Louisville, Kentucky, in 1778. He played for a dance, and it's a very interesting story, actually. He had broken his fiddle strings and had none, and they were despaired because they didn't think they could have a dance, but this boat came down the river, and this Frenchman on the boat had a fiddle. And it had extra strings, apparently, and Cato traded him something for some strings. But everybody was excited about this fiddler playing for the dance. And he actually started playing, but the people couldn't dance to his music. So after he had tried to fiddle for the dance for a while, he retired, and Cato struck up this fiddle, and they had a dance.
Okay, yeah, well.
And the first slave fiddler I know was at Boonesboro. It was Monk Estill, probably the most talented man at Boonesboro. He won his freedom because in a battle he carried a wounded man some 20 or 25 miles.
In what war?
It was one of the Indian battles. And then he got his freedom, but he fiddled for all the dances and frolics at Boonesboro and that surrounding area. Most of the fiddlers in Kentucky, black and white, by the way, also played banjo. It was very common.
Is there a tune that's but you think came into the mountains particularly early? Like an early tune from that time?
Sure. You can judge some tunes by the fact that they're a banjo tune. Now take East Virginia, for instance. You're probably acquainted with that tune. In most common verses, I am from old East Virginia to North Carolina, I did go. Well, North Carolina was one of the early frontiers.
Right.
And it is a banjo song. It's not a fiddle song, fiddle tune.
Right.
I never heard a fiddler say, I'm going to play East Virginia.
Yes, it's definitely a banjo tune.
It's a banjo song. And it goes back to the early days when people were moving from East Virginia, staying on the frontier and going to North Carolina and to Kentucky. And that was very common early on because tobacco farming in Virginia leaches the soil very quickly. So people in Maryland and Virginia were continually moving westward on the frontier.
Right. Is that one that you do, East Virginia, or is there another tune from like the Indian Wars or something like that that you ever did?
Cold Icy Mountain tells about the days when settlers first come across the mountains.
I'd love to hear that if that's okay.
I'm going across that cold icy mountain. I'm going across that cold icy mountain. Babe, that'll be my home. That'll be my home. All I drink is the tears I shed. All I drink is the tears I shed. And I never expect to see you anymore. All I eat is green willow shoots. All I eat is green willow shoots. And I never expect to see you anymore. I'm going across that cold icy mountain. I'm going across that cold icy mountain. Hey, that'll be my home. That'll be my home. Stop and tell my mama howdy. Stop and tell my mama howdy. For I never expect to see her anymore. Stop and feed my baby candy. Stop and feed my baby candy. for I never expect to see it anymore. I'm gonna cross that cold icy mountain. I'm gonna cross that cold icy mountain. Hey, that'll be my home. That'll be my home.
Beautiful. Oh, I like that a lot. So you've been frailing. Is that the primary style that you play in on the banjo?
I just played Wild Bill Jones. I was two finger picking. Sometimes
right.
I do three finger, and sometimes I up pick. And in Kentucky, two terms that were never used, as far as I can determine, was frailing and clawhammer. The common term that I have found among really good banjo players all over East Kentucky, 75 to 100 years ago, was overhand.
Oh, I never heard that before.
Overhand. There is a reference to overhand from northern Alabama from a man who learned to play from his father's slaves around 1855. He called it overhand. A term may have come from slaves originally, but it was used around East Kentucky. It was a common term, and clawhammer and frailing was not used. Now, there were other things that used, you know, but not those two terms. I have an interview of a radio star named Curly Collins, 1983, and the fellow that interviewed him asked him about clawhammer banjo, and he said, we didn't call it that, we called it overhand. Curly Collins had learned from his father. He was on the road a lot, so Curly's son, who's a friend of mine, inquired of his grandfather about the music in his family. And his grandfather said his grandfather made and played banjos. That was well before the Civil War. And his father. So Curly Collins was a great fiddler, as well as banjo player. And he was a radio star for many years. As far as oral history is concerned, there is a Kentucky folklorist named Leonard Roberts who wrote a great book called Sang Branch Settlers. That's S-A-N-G. That's short for ginseng. And he interviewed a Couch family. Now, the father, Tom Couch, was born in the 1860s. All of his children, girls and boys, learned to play banjo around 1900 on a gourd banjo that their grandfather had made. So when Leonard Roberts asked Tom Couch where the banjo picking and singing tradition his family came from, he said one of his forebears made a gourd banjo and they'd been playing and picking and singing ever since. He had no recollection of the instrument being a slave instrument.
What kind of gourds did they use?
There was a gourd grown in Kentucky at one time called a banjo gourd. I suspect it was just a bigger
Perfect.
Gourd. Yeah. Dave Ball over in Virginia said his grandfather raised banjo gourds. But there were gourd banjos played in Kentucky up until around 1950. I have a friend that saw a gourd banjo played for a dance at the Mud Lake School on Grapevine Creek in Perry County in 1946.
Have you discovered one of those instruments? Because they're very biodegradable, I imagine.
No, I haven't actually, and probably don't expect to. I do have a friend in Winchester, Kentucky, who's delivered paper in the early 60s, and in the hallway of one house there was a gourd banjo hanging up beside a fiddle. But the house has since disappeared, so he doesn't know what happened to it.
So, did you ever run into Banjo Bill Cornett when you were young?
Yes, I did. First time I remember him was him riding in the back seat of a car that had a loudspeaker system hooked up, and he was playing and singing. It was election time.
He was a state senator.
He was elected to the Kentucky legislature.
Okay, yeah.
He was a representative. He ran, and he had been elected once or twice, and he ran in 1956. When I first voted, I was 18 in 1956, and you could vote at 18 at that time in Kentucky. And he, my father had a country grocery store, so all the candidates stopped there. He stopped with one of his sons, and several of his sons had several degrees, college degrees, and pretty well-educated people, and I suspect some of them didn't think much about his music. But anyway, Banjo Bill pulled up in front of the store, and I was sitting on the porch with my mother, and I said, "Banjo Bill, if you'll play me a banjo tune or two, I'll vote for you. And I'll get my mother to vote for you." And it's, the person with him spoke up very quickly and said he doesn't have a banjo with him, and you could tell that he disapproved, you know. But Banjo Bill said, "Well, I did put the banjo in the trunk." So he got it out and played two or three tunes. The one I remember is John Henry.
That must have been thrilling.
Well, to me, he was just another banjo player, and I was excited to hear any banjo player at that time, you know, because I was playing banjo by that time.
Did you take note of his style, you know?
Not particularly. You know, I learned... my style is my own. I can't duplicate my father's style. There's one song that he played that if I try real hard, I can sort of duplicate it. But I learned probably like most people learned in that prior to that is you wanted to play the banjo. There's one around. Most extended families had a banjo player. I'm talking about prior to World War II. So you picked it up and played it. If you couldn't pick it, you downstroked it. If you couldn't do that, you picked it or you uppicked. I mean, there was a lot of different styles. I didn't see anyone playing exactly the same way. But one thing that was common to most of the playing was a lot of left-hand activity, that plucking strings that you're not noting with your right hand. There's just a lot of that to fill in behind your voice. Banjo Bill did a lot of that.
Could you demonstrate that for a minute?
One old-timer said, when I learned morphine, he said, "Son, there's more music in the first string of the banjo than any other string." And this fellow had learned at the same time my father and his sister were learning. And that was around 1905 to 1910. And I never particularly noted what he was doing, but when he said that, I realized that little extra thing I was hearing was like, if you do that, it's not very interesting. But if you pluck that first string, see how it gives it a rolling sound? And that's what I did when I played morphine. Just, it rolls. Probably the most typical song that includes a lot of the techniques would be Little Birdie.
Would you play that now?
I'd have to spend some time retuning this thing.
Oh, please do, yep.
As I said, Little Birdie is one of the songs that incorporates a lot of techniques that old-timers used in East Kentucky, regardless of the style they were playing. They did a lot of left-hand plucking, striking, and a lot of that's in Little Birdie, which I'll play for you. Short time for to be here, such a long time to be gone. Little birdie, what makes you fly so high? Don't you know?
passerby. Used to be a little boy and played down in the sun. Now I am a great big boy, trying to make myself a man. Married woman, married woman, I'll see what you have done. You've caused me for to love you, and now your man has come. Little birdie, I'll fly down on my knee. Little birdie, oh, sing your song to me.
Actually, on occasion, Little Birdie was used as a dance tune, and I did put a dance lick in there, and I'll show you that. An old gentleman named Rube Hall said he wore out a new pair of shoes one night dancing to Little Birdie. But the dance lick would be something like this.
Makes me want to dance right now. That's great. That's really great. What's the tuning?
The tuning is the special tuning for Little Birdie. You take the second string down to A, the bass string, down to C, and you drop the fifth string down to E. Yeah. And that way you get a C chord like that. My father said he learned that song around 1917 from his uncle whistling the tune. Because my father said if someone could whistle a tune, he could play it on the banjo. He said he didn't know how old he was when he started learning to play because his father played and had a banjo sitting around. So he was born in 1900. He said he thinks he started learning to play when he was about five. But he told me a wonderful story. By the time he was 10 or 12, he was a good singer and banjo player. He had a great voice. And there were two old regular Baptist ministers holding revivals around through the mountains. And he took Dad with him to warm the crowd up. One was the uncle of a friend of mine. His name was Jordan Combs. They pronounced Jordan in East Kentucky. But these old ministers had a standing bet. They watched the crowd real close. And the one that made the most women cry, the other had to buy the liquor.
How would you describe your father's style as being, different from yours?
He brushed with two or three fingers at the same time. A lot of times he had a lot of left-hand activity. I'm going to have to try to spend some time. There's one tune, one song he did that if I spent some time, I could probably duplicate his style. But, I'm handicapped. I can only play like George Gibson. I can't play like anybody else.
Well, would you play us one more tune on this radio show?
Yes, I'll do that. I'm going to play one of my father's favorite tunes, and I'll pick it a little at first so you can get a flavor of it. It's called Darling Corey.
Wake up, darling Corey. What makes you sleep so sound? I hear them robbers coming for to tear your still house down. Wake up, my darling. Go run and get my gun. I ain't no man for troubles, but I'll die before I run. Wake up, my darling. Go get you another man. I've got me another woman. You can do the very best you can. I'll do the very best I can, but I'll never give my pleasures to another gambling man. Last night upon my pillow, last night up on my bed, last night up on my pillow, Lord, I dreamed little Corey was dead. Dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cocoa ground, dig a hole down in the meadow, for to lay darling Corey down. First time I seen little Corey was by the banks of the sea. Had a 45 all round her and a banjo on her knee.
Beautiful. What's the tuning? What's the banjo tuning there?
This is a typical East Kentucky tuning for Poor Darling Corey. And several old-timers use this around East Kentucky. You go to double C tuning, and then you drop the first string to sound like the second.
So triple C.
So you've got a triple C tuning. Yeah. That was the tuning my father used for Darling Corey. Reverend Buell Kazee used the same tuning. And there was a fellow that recorded it from Corbin, Kentucky, around 1925. I believe he used the same tuning, except he dropped the fifth string to E, but I think that's the only difference.
Well, George, thank you very much for talking with me today, and it's a pleasure to have you on Down Home Radio.
You're quite welcome. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.